You're listening to the Cerberus podcast with a K, available on cerberus.com, iTunes, stitch.com, and Audioboo.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, it is podcast with a K time. With me this week is James McLean. Hello, James.
Hello there.
And let's all say hello to Brian, who's on holiday.
Let's not then. Yes. Those who go on holiday do not get the pleasures of a McLean greeting.
Okay.
You've got to be here to have a McLean greeting. I mean, it's ridiculous. If I was to offer anything else, say I was here to offer a beverage. If they're on holiday, I couldn't give them the beverage. I would not offer them the beverage. If he is not here to accept my greetings, he does not get the greetings, does he?
I see your point, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's not dwell on it. So it's been an interesting week, dear listener, even though we've... things always seem to sort of just fall off at this time of year when Doctor Who isn't on. There's very rarely any news about Doctor Who in this kind of spring period. I find that quite strange. It's the same thing happened last year. Do I mean last year or do I mean the year before? It's all become quite confusing.
A bit of a blur, yeah.
Yeah, it is. So we've had Easter and news kind of died off a little bit, apart from a few big things. And the same thing happened over the last few days. Until it was drawn to our attention yesterday that a Doctor Who fan movie has been pulled from YouTube. Now, you might think, it's a fan movie, so what? It happens all the time. And to some extent, these things do get pulled quite often, but only when they're kind of really quite naughty about how they're using the material. Power of the Daleks Reimagined was released in 2012 in two parts. And it was screened at some conventions and then uploaded to YouTube. And it's a rather... have you seen it, James?
I've seen bits of it, yeah. I didn't watch the whole thing.
And it's a very well-produced reinterpretation of the original serial, which is, of course... long missing. The fact that it has been pulled in such a manner has led many people, myself included, certainly initially, to speculate as to whether it had anything to do with the Omni rumour, the missing episodes, ongoing rumour of whether the lost episodes of Doctor Who have actually been found and have been packaged and negotiated over and tidied up as we record this podcast and as you, listener, listen. To it.
You disbelieving listener.
Yes. There seems to be a... what do you think of it, first of all? Do you think it could be related?
I think possible. I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of these sort of things, and I know how sort of legal departments can be a bit funny and things can slip through the net. But I mean, as I think you pointed out, if those have read the article before listening to the podcast, which I wouldn't say is a particularly weird way to do it, but it does... bring up a whole essay of what you should do. Should you listen to a podcast first or should you read the articles first? I don't know which way around. But if you have, you know, in the comments, you're quite articulate in some of your replies and quite ferocious as well to some of the remarks of it being, you know, for instance, you know, that they've been breaking the law. And as you say, you know, that they've been to BBC, Nick Briggs was involved. It wasn't just some off the cuff load of fans in Dorset. It was done with quite strong connections.
And it was done for charity as well.
Exactly. So, you know, it's not like any ordinary fan film in that sort of sense.
No.
So to have it pulled is a surprise. So it could be. I mean, I whether it's related to the Omni rumour, I don't know. But I was still surprised how it seems to be an increasing amount of people seem to be sort of going against the Omni rumour. I mean, one of them sort of said, I'm fed up. You know, we've been told and waiting for ages and nothing's happened. You think, well, you had two bloody stories released.
Yeah, I know, exactly, yeah. And then there's the other side of it. Like, apparently Doctor Who Magazine have, and Philip Morris's organisation and the BBC have both said in the latest DWM that there's nothing more. But the people were saying there's nothing up until a few weeks before Web of Fear and Enemy of the World were announced, so... It's very difficult. I've spoken to Nick Scoville on Facebook this morning, who was the star who played the Doctor in Power of the Daleks Reimagined, and he's like key to the production. I don't want to quote him because the conversation didn't go along the lines of, is it okay if I quote you or anything? But he basically said that he wasn't aware of why it had been pulled. He'd been trying to find out why, but as yet hadn't found out. So that as of Monday afternoon, well, certainly as of Monday morning, even the people behind it didn't know why this had happened. So,
I mean, again, it's worth just sort of throwing out there the smoke and fire thing. There's a lot of little things that have been going buzzing around the last few years, which do point towards, little things sort of said at conventions.
Yes.
You know, Julian Glover.
Yes.
The connection there. There's, you know, the Daily Mirror was pointing on an inside source saying that Marco Polo had been found. You know, it's not just a load of fans whispering and hoping. There's, you know, I know this sounds cruel, but I won't say my life is, you know, the most fulfilled life in the world, but I don't really, it doesn't make that big a difference to me whether this stuff is found or not, as I've said before. But it's just on the data that comes through. I would suggest that there is a good reason to assume that there might be some more stuff
that's
being held back.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't argue with that. I mean, we're just going to have to wait and see. We can't force the future. We can't make anything happen. We just got to wait and see how it turns out. But
they
again,
do say time will tell.
It usually does. Yes.
It always does.
It always does, yes. But as I was going to say, is we, you know, just sit back and enjoy the ride to it.
Yeah, I think McCoy's is better.
Do you?
Yeah. Okay. It's catchier.
It's catchier, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Time will tell.
Fine. Fair enough. It's okay.
Did you watch that in the end, Remembrance?
Did I watch it? Yeah, we talked about Remembrance.
We did?
We didn't talk about Fenric yet.
Fenric, have you watched Fenric?
Not yet, because that was when I discovered the DVD player was broken.
Right, yes,
of course. Trying to watch Fenric, and then we got a new DVD player, and Kerry kind of, because we'd watched the same episode like 13 times trying to get past the bit where the girls go swimming.
Yeah. She
couldn't face watching it again, so we kind of just put it aside, and we've been watching Professionals for a few weeks, so we'll maybe get back to it once we've cleared Professionals Series 2, which features lots of Doctor Who people.
Oh, yeah, try and justify it, Eli.
Don't need to justify anything. How dare you? So let's push on beyond the infinite rabbit warren of the Omni rumour to the Doctor dueling with Robin Hood. Did you see this clip?
Actually, I didn't. I think this is the one thing that I've not actually seen on the list that we put together, because there is a fair amount of organisation.
I think there's a rogue we in that last statement. But,
okay. It was a royal we. One.
Okay. So this chap called Mike Winks, which is his username. I don't know what his real name is. I wouldn't like to say that his surname is Winks, or that he has a kind of habitual wink. And that's not a typo. He's a photo bucket user, and he's uploaded some photos and some film of Peter Capaldi's stunt double dueling with... I'm not sure whether it was the actor who's been cast as Robin Hood or his stunt double. It is a little bit blurry, the footage, in a kind of forest setting on a log across a river from the recent shooting on location of what we believe to be called Robots of Sherwood, although I think James and I both have publicly said we hope that isn't the name of the episode, because it's a bit cheesy.
It is, isn't it?
Yes. And obvious. And have you watched the footage?
I have, yes.
Yes.
I watched it ages ago.
Yes. And what I particularly like about it, and this is spoiler city now, dear listener, so maybe skip forward 5 minutes, or do what everyone else is doing and listen. The Doctor is dueling with Robin Hood, and it's exciting. And you can see how, there's lots of long and mid shots there, and there'll be like close-ups cutting of Capaldi and his opposing actor. But the duel isn't any standard duel, is it, James?
No.
It's sword versus spoon.
Yes.
Which is a bit Seventh Doctor, perhaps. Maybe that's something they could have got the Seventh Doctor to do. Are you not impressed with the spoon?
No, I think I still have a slight problem that I find the whole Robots of Sherwood idea so utterly rubbish that I just can't invest in it. I'm going to have to, it's one of those things where I'm going to have to be wooed by the actual, you know, the actual event.
Okay, well, someone suggested that it might actually be more of a Westworld sort of a thing.
Well, it does, I mean, the costume in the clip is extremely cheesy.
Uh-huh.
So I don't doubt that it's not going to be Robin of Sherwood. It's going to be something a little more. But it's just a pastiche. I don't know. I always find that Doctor Who works best when it's a little less on the nose, or if it is on the nose, that it has some sort of contemporary, it's riffing off some contemporary social issues. When it sort of plays close to a sort of pastiche bone, which...
Well, I mean, we were talking about Brandon Morbius a couple of weeks ago, weren't we? And surely that's what that does.
Well, I'm actually not that keen on Brandon Morbius, personally. Mm-hmm. I think it's horrendously overrated, but I'm not saying it's bad either. But given that everyone gushes over it, I've never been quite really see it.
It's probably largely to do with the cast.
But it's not really. I mean, it's not on the nose. If it was called, the brain of Time Lord Frankenstein, or something, or the Time Lord was called Shelley or something, I think it would probably weaken it if it was. The Brain of Morbius is like a lot of Doctor Who's of that era, and when Doctor Who does quite well, and a lot of shows do quite well, is when they take a known concept and they integrate it as a sort of in their own manner, if you see what I mean. This isn't doing that. This isn't. If they were to do that with this, it would be the Doctor landing on a planet where there is a tyrannical sheriff, king, whatever they want to call it in there, and he helps a load of rebels in a forest. Sounds actually quite familiar to probably a lot of Doctor Who adventures. That would be doing what Brain of Morbius did. This isn't. This is actually playing on the specific thing of Robin Hood. And I think that's where Doctor Who can get a bit tacky if it goes down that route, okay, unless it's done very well.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to argue with you. I can absolutely see your point. Dear listener, don't forget that you can tell us your thoughts as well in the comments section below this week's podcast, if you're listening through the website. If you're on iTunes or Audio Boo, then you can pop over to Cast Erebus, or you can tweet us or email us, and we'll address those as they come in.
Or ignore you. Time.
Or you could ignore us, but you know.
No, I meant we would ignore them.
Oh, we would ignore them. Well, yes, that does happen. But it's not usually intentional unless they're comments directed to James.
Yeah, so I do tend to try and ignore comments if I can. Absolutely live. You see these long diatribes I put into the comment section.
Indeed.
I can't help it.
Well, look, Dodger's never done Robin Hood before, has he?
No, he hasn't done Debbie either.
Oh!
Dallas, yeah.
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 Or Maid Marian.
That could be quite a good segue if it was a little later in the podcast, but carry on.
Sadly, it's not. So, can you think of any other historical character, legendary figures type of things?
Well, obviously, the Shakespeare Code is.
There's a Shakespeare Code,
which,
yeah,
again, I think is, again, it weakens it by being a little too close to the bone as well. I mean, okay, fair enough. It wasn't like he goes and meets someone playing Hamlet and it's all about Hamlet, but it still feels a little, twee, maybe. Yeah, I think the new series has done it a couple of times, and I'm trying to think where they are. I mean, I suppose to a certain
degree, with
Unquiet
it all came Dead, from,
like that.
Yeah, it all came from The Unquiet Dead, really, didn't it?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that gets away with it, perhaps. Now, this might be why it works so well in as opposed to The Shakespeare Code and The Unicorn and the Wasp, is that it put Dickens into a situation that he's actually well known for being in. He was an investigator in he was very interested in the occult.
Yes.
And that kind of thing. So perhaps that is why it worked so well, obviously because the author was so well versed in Dickens.
Yes. Yeah, I think you're right there. I mean, I suppose this is again slightly different since we're talking about them meeting. Okay, we've got to stress again, we're not saying that he does meet Robin Hood in this. It looks very unlikely. It does look like a Westworld or some sort of robots in medieval times. So it is a little different like that. I'm trying to think of other ones where they've sort of played it. I mean, I think one example of it, which a lot of people liked, was the Christmas one with Matt Smith, the Christmas Carol one.
Yes.
I personally, again, felt it played it too close, but a lot of people liked it. So maybe they will like this as well if it plays it in that sort of way, because that obviously wasn't Scrooge, but it was played as if it pretty much was Scrooge.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's what I mean. I just felt it was just lazy is a wrong word to use, but
easy.
Yeah, somehow it just feels a bit easy. It doesn't feel like it's enough of a stretch. And then to play it so close as well, that, not only does he meet someone who's very Scrooge-like, he then has to do the whole, past, present, future thing. it just like, no, you know, Doctor Who should be its own show. It shouldn't really be there to explore other myths in such a blatant, blunt way.
Well, do you think maybe this is all, I mean, is this yet another thing that we can blame Time Lash for?
What, meeting historical?
Meeting historical, yeah.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I suppose, to be fair, I mean, obviously Hartnell was meeting historicals. You know, I mean, the Crusade is an example.
Hmm.
Is the most, and obviously Marco Polo.
Or doing it badly, then. or taking them on a journey, taking that person on the adventure.
I think the difference is that when Hartnell did it, the way they did it right is that they took these situations and they played them true in the sense that the Doctor fell into their world rather than they fell into the Doctor's world.
There was nothing changed.
No,
no change to the legend, or, you know, it didn't contradict anything that was known.
But that's where the truthness came. So you could go into Marco Polo, and it was their travellers trapped in Marco Polo's world. So there was no monsters, there was no end of the world. It was them having to try and exist in the scenario presented to them around this historical character. So in some ways, it was fairly authentic, as kids' TV could be. But when you get to Time Lash, then you're doing it the other way around. And, you know, our other favourite, Time of the Rani.
Oh, I love that one.
Oh, I know. It's brilliant, isn't it? You know, the way they use such subtle historical figures like Albert Einstein. And, you know, it's just...
Well, his head, to be fair, isn't it? Isn't it just his brain? Or am I thinking of...
No, I think they actually have them, don't they?
Am I thinking of Dimensions in Time?
No. I think you're being far too subtle there, Christian.
Am I? Okay.
If you remember rightly, I think they all come out of their cryo chambers at the end and they all sort of bustle around the place.
Oh, right? Yes.
All these famous historical
people.
Oh,
please don't. No, stop. Yes. I'm having flashbacks now.
Yeah. So I think that's the danger that New Who has taken too much from, as you say, the 80s. And I don't think it works like that. I just don't think it gives people... The Shakespeare Code almost does it right. As you say, Unquiet Dead sort of almost does it right. But again, you kind of feel that it would be more interesting in Unquiet Dead and a little more clever if they'd actually gone along with Dickens on something that wasn't supernatural. Or, you know, in Shakespeare Code again, you know, there was a lot of politics. There was a lot of things going on at the time. And sometimes, as we've said many times, you know, Doctor Who doesn't have to be about the monsters. I think that's maybe what's limiting it a bit at the moment. It doesn't have to be robots. It doesn't have to be monsters. And it would just be nice to see it break away from that fixation. I don't know. Maybe I need to watch a different television show.
No. There's plenty of television shows to watch.
I mean, it will be good, as I say. I mean, I'm not saying that the Robin thing will be rubbish. I mean, as we've said, as we always say, proof will come when it's on.
You know, yes.
Speculate now and say what you think now, as long as you're willing to change your mind if you see it and it is really good, or really bad. So yes, but I do really feel that they need to get out of this and just try something a little more adult and probably a little more difficult in some ways.
Okay.
But possibly even cheaper. I mean, no monsters in an episode.
Hmm.
You know, the Master. I mean, that's the funny thing is, you know, you should really be able to have the Master in an episode. And we haven't had that yet, where the Master appears in the episode where there isn't, again, robots or monsters included as well. You know, just face the Doctor.
Just the Master on his own.
Yes. I mean, you take... Okay, I know the Master has always had a certain amount of sci-fi around him, but you don't need that much sci-fi around him. He is a challenge in himself.
Hmm.
So yeah, anyway.
Okay. Well, I'd like to see that, actually, now you've mentioned it.
Yeah, so would I.
Okay. We'll move on to this is really exciting. Hollywood, California, May the 2nd, 2014. This is a press release I'm about to read to you, dear listener. Paramount Pictures and Skydance Productions announced today that Doctor Who star Matt Smith will join the cast of the upcoming Terminator reboot. Smith will play a new character with a strong connection to John Connor, alongside Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jason Clarke, Emilia Clarke, Jai Courtney, he was the chap in the last Die Hard film, who played John McClane's son. J.K. Simmons, Dayo Okin-Ai, and Byung-Hun Lee. Alan Taylor is directing the film from a screenplay by Leita Kalogridis and Patrick Lussier. Jumped down a little bit. Smith is best known for playing the Doctor on the popular Doctor Who television series during the 2011, 2103, which obviously has got to be 2013 seasons. In fact, it should be 2010 to 2013 seasons. His other television credits include Chris Rendy's Kind, Moses Jones and The Street. And he can be seen next on the big screen in Lost River, directed by Ryan Gosling. Just to confirm that, summarise, Matt Smith's going to be in the new Terminator trilogy. And according to the source, Deadline.com, I'll just read this bit to you. Matt is set to make his debut as a new character who has strong connection with John Connor in Terminator Genisys, released on the 1st of July 2015, as you know. And his role will be expanded in the further two movies. According to Wikipedia, shooting has already started on Terminator Genisys now, and it began in April. This might explain why Matt pulled out of some things recently as well.
Right.
And of course, we've seen him in various photographs of late with Miss Karen Gillan. What do you think? Matt Smith in Terminator, that's pretty big, isn't it, for a Doctor Who?
Yeah, I guess it is, isn't it? I
kind of trumps Tennant a bit, doesn't it?
Well, of course.
Wanders off to Tennant to do a bad American accent and get tipped for the big time, and nothing comes of it, really. And then Smith goes over, spends like a fortnight there, and gets cast in a Terminator reboot.
Well, I mean, you could also argue that Terminator reboots have had a bit of a tempestuous time of late.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it could be as much a bomb as it could be a hit.
Could be. Well, do you know, I liked the last one.
Well, Salvation.
Yeah, I thought it was quite good.
I saw it on Channel 5. And when I say I saw it, I meant that occasionally my eyes would wander to the screen.
Right. Okay.
Because they'd be more interested by the colour of, I suppose, my wallpaper. No, I wasn't that impressed. And
I quite liked it. It was different, and I think it had some good stuff going in there. I think the script could have done with polishing a bit, but it has some really good ideas in there, like the giant Terminator and things, and the Terminator motorbikes also.
Seriously, but I thought they were terrible.
Yeah, I thought they were quite good.
Oh, I thought, good lord, you know, is this Transformers again?
That's maybe why I like them.
I don't know. It just didn't. I just didn't feel it very.
But what I particularly liked about it was the fact it didn't contradict anything as well, which I felt was important. Because it clearly wasn't an out and out reboot, so I didn't see there any need to contradict things this time around. It is a reboot. We know they've specifically and explicitly said that it's going to be a reboot, so I'm not worried about that. What did you think of the third Terminator?
What, the Rise of the Machines?
Yeah.
I thought it was a mess. I thought it had a gutsy ending, something which Salvation didn't do, and in fact actually went back and redid because they were scared in their panties, so they went and re-altered the ending, which was meant. So, but you know, Rise of the Machines. Well, you know, Schwarzenegger was fine in it. The John Connor casting and the girl were terrible castings.
Yeah. I got that.
And they really damaged the film. But the actual fact that the film ended on quite a gutsy move.
Yeah, that's one of my favourite endings of any film ever. I think it's a really good ending. And I also like as well, I may have mentioned this on the podcast before, but it might have been 2 or 3 years ago when I did, when the machines actually start rising in the military HQ, there's a moment when the shadow comes before before you see the first Terminator droid. And it's like when you see the Daleks in Genesis of the Daleks when they first rise up. So I really like that moment. Really,
well,
do.
There's a few things I like. I mean, I also, you know, I know we shouldn't be going on this, but I like the small nod to the. Now I'm thinking of Salvation. Small nod to the Schwarzenegger one with the T-800 at the end. But you've also got in Rise of the Machines, you've got that nice nod to Schwarzenegger, did they edit that out in the end? Was that just a deleted scene in the end?
What's
with
that?
Him as the general. Where Schwarzenegger appears in Rise of the Machine. Oh, no, it's not. Again, that's Salvation as well, isn't it? I'm getting totally mixed up.
Oh, that must have been a deleted scene. I haven't seen that.
Yeah, no, I think it's Salvation where Schwarzenegger appears as a general.
Right, okay. No, I haven't seen that.
Because that was... Because, yes, he's in Rise of the Machine. No, Rise of the Machines is all right. I mean, it's a messy franchise. It's another example of perhaps a franchise which should have stopped and done something they've done something new.
Well, it wasn't a franchise, was it? It wasn't intended to be a franchise, was
exactly.
It? It was just a film. Yeah.
And then the second film sort of messed a bit with the first, with the dates and the ages and the whole rationale of the first being you can't change the future. And then suddenly, well, you possibly
you
can.
Put it off a bit, maybe.
Yeah, put it off a bit. You know, Jesus, what's that meant to me? Says he with Doctor Who, which does all that all the time. God, what a ridiculous concept, time changing like that. Who would watch a show about time changing? But it is an interesting comparison, actually, to go with Doctor Who. It is another example of how film and television has a real, real awkward situation with time travel, because in the end, the story comes before the logistics. So you get these very messy shows, and Doctor Who's messy like that as well.
Yeah.
I mean, they've tried to neaten it up in the 90s with the Web of Time in the books, and then obviously, you know, fixed points of time since Russell's era to sort of try and justify why time can change sometimes and sometimes it can't. But yeah, Terminator is such a messy franchise. I do find it hard when they change actors as well.
Yeah.
I find that really does. I find, am I superficial like that? Should I be less? I mean, do we get that in Doctor Who? Have we had that many actor changes? Apart
no.
from the obvious, the obvious changing of actor every 4 or 5 years. But we've not had, we had people play the same parts, apart from things like Davros.
Davros, yeah, and the Master, and that's about it, isn't it?
I can't think of people who've come back as different.
I think there are a few that could have been replaced. Arthur's family, apart from his sister.
Yeah, Martha's family was a bit of a disappointment, weren't they? Mm. No offence, but that didn't work. I do find that hard in television, is when you suddenly have a cast change and there's no justification for it. And Terminator's had a few of those. I personally tend to just think of the first two and then leave it at that.
Mm.
I like the TV show, but even that was flawed.
It's the Sarah Connor thing.
Yeah, the Sarah Connor thing. Had it was flawed, it was slow. Some dodgy casting, but mainly it was the writing was too somber and the characters didn't gel enough to be interesting, which is why I mean with Smith is in a sense it could be a golden opportunity or it could end up being a real US career killer, depending on how it fares. But I think it'll probably fare quite well. I think they'll have learned a bit from their past mistakes, and having Schwarzenegger attached, I think. Yeah.
One would think that they have learned. There's plenty to learn from. Particularly with the last two movies, I think. He's doing well in the US. Karen Gillan's doing well in the US as well, isn't she?
Well, I mean, Doctor Who's had a lot more profile in the US, hasn't
yes.
it?
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
2010.
Most definitely, yeah.
So I'm not entirely surprised. But again, I mean, has Guardians of the Galaxy come out yet?
No, it's not out yet, no.
It's not out yet. I mean, I'll be interested to see how that fares. I mean, to me, that screams bomb. But again, we'll have to see. There seems to be a lot of
well, Stan Lee's in it, isn't it? Even though he said initially that he wasn't going to appear in it because it wasn't one of his creations.
Oh, but he's decided to appear.
But he has filmed a scene, yeah, apparently.
Yeah, it just feels a bit bottom of the barrel to me, but maybe I'm wrong.
Might turn out to be quite good. I mean, there's more bottom of the barrel stuff that they probably won't make films on. So
superheroes, you know, it's obviously a tried and tested format which brings in figures, and they do feel like they nowadays either are at the bottom of the barrel of things which people haven't really heard of or don't really know, or let's just reboot it again.
Well, they say that, but I mean, they could easily do a, I mean, why don't they do a Spider-Man team-up movie along X-Men and Avengers way? Do a Spider-Man and his amazing friends team-up movie?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the Spider-Man thing is to do with licensing, isn't it? Is that they've got Spider-Man was done under a different.
Yeah, of course, Iceman's in X-Men, isn't he?
Yeah, so there's a different sort of. I mean, I think I wonder, you know, a few years time when they've got a little more control over their, like, you know, what they can.
Well, they've worked together on Avengers, haven't they? I think Spider-Man's in the next Avengers film.
Is he? Oh, that's
read something along those lines. Yeah,
probably another reason why they rebooted it. I don't know. Maybe they got their. Like, I don't. I don't follow the. I just don't like superhero movies particularly because they are, again, so horrendously lazy that they can't. You know, the first one is always about the origin, which doesn't need to be, really, to be frank. No. I mean, no one gives a damn where Superman came from. You know, the casual audience doesn't give a damn. They don't really give a damn about where Batman came from. And then they further don't give a damn about the origin of a villain in that episode as well. So there's got to be a villain's origin as well, which slows things up.
Well, that's what spoils the third Spider-Man film, doesn't it? because you've got those two villains.
Well, that's the next
And then you've got the Harry Osborn thing going on at the same time.
And then the next problem is, as you say, when you get to the sequels, you've got to double your villains. You can't, which is crazy. No other sequel film does that. Or why suddenly superhero films, you get the next one, you can't just have one new villain, you've got to have three or two, and then on the third one, three. And so, I just genuinely just don't find them that enjoyable to watch. They sound fun, but I just sort of realised after being bored to death in cinemas that it just ain't the way to go.
No. Have you seen Dread then?
I have.
What did you think?
That was one of the few refreshing moments of cinema I've had. And not just in the comic book fright, theme, but
generally
just within its general structure, its pacing, its use of characters.
And it was superbly produced on that budget as well.
On that budget, fantastically done.
And I brought that up because, you know, there's always been this talk of Doctor Who being done as a movie, and I have a feeling that if it went into like the American proper traditional American style movie, you know, I say proper traditional, but you know what I'm saying when I say proper traditional, what people expect from a movie, Doctor Who will fail dismally in that sense, I think. Yeah. To me, Dread is to superhero movies what I suppose what the X-Files was to paranormal TV adventure series. In that, when it first came along, and it's got a revolutionary sort of attitude to doing it. It has a single-minded approach, and it doesn't do it with any expectations.
Yeah.
And a Doctor Who movie should be like that, I feel.
Yeah, I don't know how you would do a Doctor Who movie. I mean, I would say a Doctor Who movie would probably be done, if, you know, going back to the X-Files, in a similar route and actually doing it as a small, like Firefly, with Serenity, very much its own beast, but still very connected to its TV show. So you're not stuck in that movie format. You move it on the basic presumption that people know what it's about, and if they don't, very early on, you make it abundantly clear. Which Serenity did very, very well, given that was quite a complex idea and it sort of pulled it all out in the first 5 minutes. I agree with you. I mean, I think Dread to me was a warning sign to superhero movies of what you should be doing.
Yeah.
And you're not. And to be honest, again, if we go back to Doctor Who, it's what Doctor Who should be doing, in the sense, you know, without giving anything away if you've not seen Dread, but its ending is not that standard explosive, the world's going to end affair. It's very low key. And still very effective. And Doctor Who should be doing that. And I think this is what just gets me a little annoyed with the new series, is that it's got examples within its own history that you don't need to be doing this explosive ending every time.
Yeah.
And yet it seems to fail to take those risks and try them. And as I say, I'm not saying that I'm right. I'm saying you should be there trying them. We should be trying, as we've said before, one in World War II. Lose the TARDIS, let the Doctor survive in a situation in World War II, not meeting Hitler, not meeting generals, you know, put him against antagonist. The war is an antagonist, you know, give that a bit of a risk, you know, low key, but you can keep tension there. Tension doesn't have to be about destroying worlds. And Doctor Who needs to get out of this almost, it's almost like a Hollywood format where it has to keep ramping up. It needs to stop doing that. Calm down. Well,
I agree with you wholeheartedly, I think. It's interesting. We'll come back to what you just been talking about endings there a little bit later on, actually, because I have noticed a few. I was watching something the other day and it got me thinking about certain things. But let's move on now to, I like this, actually. We had Russell T Davies has been in, and we mentioned the Big Finish podcast with Toby Hodoke a couple of weeks ago, didn't we?
You did, yes.
And basically telling you, listener, to, if you want to listen to any other podcast, listen to that. Obviously listen to us as well, but listen to that, Toby Hodoke's News Who's Round, because it's really good. And he spoke to Russell T Davies some months ago, and he split it up over three separate podcasts with someone sticking someone else in between. There's a good one, for instance, with Arthur Darvill. And Russell T Davies was asked by Toby about the soapy elements in Doctor Who that he, did he introduce them or did he reintroduce them? Depends on what you think about the last years of the classic series. During their exploration of Series 2, my Casterbus colleague James Lamond writes, they touch on the snog between the Doctor and Madame de Pompadour in 2006's Girl in the Fireplace, a superb episode, leading Toby to ask whether RTD has a sympathy with the fans who would prefer a less soap opera tone. He doesn't. Russell says, I'm not doing an accent. That's me saying that. I absolutely think that they're wrong. I can understand where it is coming from, but it doesn't mean I like where it is, where it's coming from. You are looking at a major character in his own show that's on for 50 years, and you're denying him a full life. You can't do that. Plus, I have to say, what a load of fuss about nonsense. If you added all the kisses and the love lines, I think you'd have about 40 seconds of material. Seriously, think about it. It's not much, it's tiny, and it very rarely changed the direction of a story. But mainly, it's so alive, you have to let it move on. What do you think of that?
I think he's right, by and large. Mm-hmm. I think there's a big difference between what fans will call it soapy and what is drama. Now, I don't personally think, as we've said many times before, I didn't like the Rose Doctor dynamic, especially in the second.
I think Brian and I generally agree with you on that.
Yeah, we don't like it. So, but that doesn't mean that I think it was wrong. I don't think it was soapy. I think soap to me is when drama is character drama is contrived to be the leading force within a story, that is what drives it along. And I agree with Russell that, like, even his relationship with Rose was an underpinning. It wasn't the main thing that was going through the storylines. It was not the focus. It was not the plot focus. So I think calling it soapy is a little over dramatic. Whether you enjoyed it or not is a different matter, and I think that probably comes down to individuals. I think he's right. I think as soon as you, I think it fleshes out what ultimately. I mean, while I love the old show, I have more of the old show on DVD than I have any of the new show. So it's not about me having a go at the old show, but the old Doctor was very two-dimensional. He was there to drive along exciting 25-minute stories each week. You know, there wasn't that much consistency in the character, bar minor things, as we talked about before, as I talked to Terranova about, you know, the Pertwee, you know, the end of Pertwee Planet of the Spiders does sort of culminate in what is a few of Pertwee's characteristics. He's very, very self-focused, quite selfish, and he pays for that in his last episode. And you get little things like that in the old series, but not much. But the new series was very much about saying, this is a full real character. If this character is pretty much the epitome of what we want in humanity, compassionate, fair, looks after the poor or the weak, fights establishments. If he's that sort of character, then he's going to have personality. He's going to have weaknesses and strengths. And, you know, if you put him after a massive war, like anyone who comes through a war who has got compassion, that's going to damage them. And that's going to make them perhaps more vulnerable. That's going to make them perhaps connect people more than they would have done before, because they're looking to rediscover themselves. So all these things is what Davis was doing. And I thought that was very smart. So, yes, well, I didn't particularly like, my issue, I think, was I didn't really feel that I could see what the Doctor saw in Rose. As we've said this before, I kind of felt that the writing drummed Rose up to being more than she actually was. And we can see that in Captain Jack would say exactly the same sort of things, that she was this amazing girl. And it's like, well, I don't really see that really in her. Not really. I mean, she's a bolshy girl. She's a confident girl. And, you know, she cares. And she's, you know, you could say that she's unique. But I didn't like the way the story sort of pushed her forward like that. I think that was the irritation for me. The kissing and that, oh... I'm more annoyed with, as I've said before, with Moffat. I think Moffat, obviously, as we've talked about, went over the line with a song a little and took away from the ambiguity, sort of made it a little too loving. While, to be fair to Davis, you never were certain that the love that the Doctor had was a human love, or whether it was a sort of compassionate love. And, you know, I'm not sure whether a Doctor could let himself, I don't know whether he could let himself love someone, to be honest, in that sort of way, given that their lives are so finite and his are so long. I don't know. It's a topic, isn't it, that comes around Doctor Who all the time. I mean, I was reading the comments, and again, I'm sorry, Mr. Cavanagh, but I do disagree. I don't believe that you know, because he's had a granddaughter, that means that he naturally falls in love like a human. I still believe that the whole point of Time Lords is that they are almost like the pinnacle of evolution. When the point, when you get to a point where you can do anything and in fact control time. And I think what is very telling, I would say, about Time Lords is that they found a way to defeat death. You kind of feel, well, if they can defeat death, they probably can defeat the whole sort of birth thing as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they're that sort of the end of the spectrum. So, you know, things like grandfather, uncle, you know, whether you want to go down the whole book version of looms, or whether you want to say they could be honorary titles, or maybe they give birth, or I just like to think they do things a little different than fall in love with 17-year-olds. You know,
17-year-olds of a different species.
I just don't feel that's yeah. I suppose that's the one part of the drama I never felt very comfortable with, and it's a very new wave thing. And I think Davis was to a certain degree capitalizing on the popularity in the teen market with things like Buffy, where you had Angel, who was 200 odd years old, falling in love with a 16-year-old, and the audiences lapped it up. They loved it. So, you know, I think there was a bit of a riff on that, that, you know, so far as storytelling was going, that would carry some popularity, and the show needed to find popularity quick.
Yeah.
So I think he made the right moves. Didn't quite gel enough for me. Madame de Pompadour, I could understand more.
Yes,
than
yes, absolutely. I think a lot of people would agree with that. I mean, I look at it as, I actually commented on the article and said, ultimately, we should look at this as an aspect of the Doctor, just as we do the manipulative Seventh Doctor, the establishment coaching Third Doctor, etc.
Mm.
It takes a particular type of actor to be able to play this particular aspect of the Doctor convincingly. David Tennant did it, but would it have developed in quite the same way had Eccleston stuck around?
But that's the problem, isn't it? Because Smith has had to do it as well, which is what I've always had a problem. Is that the problem with Moffat's version is that Moffat Smith is very asexual, very toned down in that sort of sense, to a point where, you know, there's even a comment in Day of the Doctor, isn't it? They sort of said that the part of the fun the actors had was the sort of Smith Doctor being sort of slightly bewildered by the sort of allure that the Tenth Doctor has with girls.
Yeah.
That he doesn't have. And yet at the same time, Moffat forces in this River Song story and him being sort of flirty, it doesn't fit.
Yeah.
It doesn't work with him because he's not that sort of facet.
It's one of those things, isn't it? The whole, this again gets me onto what I was getting at before. There's like these particular decisions made. It seems to be a lot of them. I think we can look at perhaps Martha's family as being one of those where there's like a decision made and these people will come in and the show will go in such and such a way. And I suspect there was a lot of rewriting done after the rushes for Smith and Jones, when it became apparent that they actually weren't that good a group. And maybe they were.
You think so?
Yeah, I think of the father in particular. We never saw him again until the very end, did we? You know, like the girlfriend subplot. I think that must have been pulled out at some point. And then we've got River Song. River Song, which is a fantastic idea if you've got the same leading man.
Yeah, you do kind of feel that it was, as we've said before, that it was written on the presumption that Tennant was carrying on. Yeah.
So if he wasn't carrying on, then pull it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll come to that in a little
bit. Or even do it for another Doctor. I mean, I know that sounds unfair to Alex Kingston, but if it wasn't going to fit your next Doctor, hold it back. There's no reason your 14th Doctor or your 15th Doctor couldn't have a regenerated River Song if you wanted to go down that line and have the character.
You could bring it in a few years' time, and you've got some you've got a quite well-known and respected Scottish actor who never in a million years is going to do Doctor Who when he gets cast. You know.
Well, to be honest, he would probably work well with River Song.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I've no offence to Alex Kingston, but she comes across as a mature female actress. I kind of feel that she'd probably have more chemistry with Capaldi than she did with Smith.
I think they got there in the end, but initially it was very uncomfortable and it really didn't sit well with me.
They toned her down a lot, didn't they, by the end? I think she seemed to, maybe I'm wrong, but I kind of felt that they sort of pulled her back a little. I don't know, she was still incredibly irritating in most of the episodes.
Yeah.
I don't know, but yeah, I agree with you. I think what I liked about Davis's era, well, the two things I like is that one, he does. I know there was someone put in the comments that, you know, he needs to admit when he's wrong. And I think what he does actually,
doesn't he? Yeah,
he's very critical about where he makes mistakes or things didn't work. But I think his stuff was very true to the characters. Like I say, Rose was really annoying, but she was a chavvy teenager, and they are like that.
Yeah,
it was very well written. someone had a go about her mum and the family, but the mum I thought was very well written as well.
Yeah. Camille Kadjuri is really good as well.
And there's a very consistency. As I say, with the Moffat era, it doesn't carry that same, which is a shame. You know, the Doctor didn't... was River Song felt wrong for this Doctor, and I think that was my problem more than anything, is it just didn't feel... it didn't feel the right... I didn't understand the relationship. And there'd be times where you see him sort of doing his hair in the mirror before going out and meeting her, and you're thinking, why? You don't seem to have any interest in women. Why are you doing that? You don't even seem to have an interest in her. It seems so off the wall and eccentric, and you can do that with a Doctor, but when you're actually trying to understand what is effectively a human relationship they're pushing, in the sense that we're meant to understand their attractions, it was just so confusing. And then to actually have the daughter of the companion, yeah. Weird.
Oh, that revelation.
That revelation, which was just like, well, yeah, we saw it coming, but we really didn't want to see it coming, because it's just, it's like, it was very American. I don't want to say that, because that makes it sound like American stuff's terrible, and it's not. American stuff can be absolutely fantastic. But it felt, that to me felt soapy.
Definitely soapy.
Because it was an emotional contrivance that drove the story. It's like, but it didn't make sense. It was like, oh yeah, well, you know, having sex in the TARDIS, these two created a Time Lord, half Time Lord child. You know, what? Is that your excuse? Really? Seriously? God.
Okay. Yeah, we've covered this before, so let's move on.
I suppose we have.
We have, haven't we? Yeah, and we've got recommendations to go through. Now, I've got a couple this week. How many have you got?
I've got about one, I think.
You've got one. Well, we'll do one of mine first, and we'll do yours, and we'll do my other one.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to do my first one. I've been watching and chuckling inwardly and admiring, but never rarely laughing out loud, occasionally laughing out loud, I suppose, at Rob Brydon and Steve Coogan's The Trip to Italy.
Oh, yes. I've watched a couple of episodes of that.
And I think it's beautifully filmed. And the direction, such as... well, it's not really direction, because they're basically riffing more or less all the way through. The camera work is superb. And it's just a really nice, comfortable... Even when they've been quite snidey with each other, it's one of those rare comedies where it's actually quite nice to watch and you don't feel like any of it's particularly uncomfortable. Even when Rob Brydon's shagging behind his wife, and I should just point out... that they're playing kind of accentuated versions of themselves, not actually playing, they're not actually being themselves, they are playing. It's just really good. And if you haven't watched it, then I would recommend you do. Some good impersonations in there as well. And in last week's edition, the moment when Rob Brydon does his famous man in a box with the calcified remains of someone who died in the Vesuvius explosion at Pompeii, and Steve Coogan's reaction to that is particularly good.
I haven't seen that. I'll have to watch. I watched the first two,
right,
and then I forgot about it. But yes, it's very good.
I have it on Series Link. I do like watching it.
I wasn't sure how much was improvised and how much was serious, and how much was, as you say, contrived for the structure.
Mm.
But yes, it's a very good show. Yeah. Very good show.
I think largely that the bits in the restaurants are when they're driving, those are the bits that they just make up as they're going. And then it's like little bit of storyline bits that they put in, such as Brydon sleeping with the woman on the boat, for instance, or whatever. Is that a spoiler for you?
Yes, it was, actually. But, you know, given that it's not really a drama, that it's not going to take away from watching the show. It is a very good show, yes. I would recommend that.
Okay, what's yours this week?
Well, I was going to recommend, if you haven't seen it, and unfortunately you probably need to go and get the DVD if you've not seen any of it, is the Orphan Black TV show, which was
made
by BBC America.
Didn't you recommend this last week?
BBC. I did. Second series has just started this week, and it's proving to be just as good as the first series. So I would say, if you've not had a chance, watch that. It's got really nothing to do with Doctor Who. Interesting, one thing I did think about it, because Orphan Black, very, very basically, is a story of a girl who meets someone who looks very much like her at a train station, who then goes and kills herself, and she takes over her identity because she looks enough like her, and then everything goes crazy. And it sort of reminded me, I mean, I used to love the show Quantum Leap, to go back to time travel. And that was, if you didn't know, was about a gentleman jumping through time into different people's bodies and then having to sort out their problems within a weekly format. In a sense, Orphan Black does what If Quantum Leap Came Back should do. And in a sense, actually, you know, talking about, you know, going back to what we said earlier, perhaps it's something Doctor Who should think about doing. Because what Orphan Black did, as I say, is set up a situation where she enters someone else's life in the same way in Quantum Leap Sam Beckett used to. And then the audience watch as you start to, that life expands out and becomes more complicated. And she realizes she's totally out of her depth in a situation which is beyond what she'd imagine. But as the audience, you find it all out like she does, you know, bit by bit. And watch her having to try and cope and pretend that she's someone she isn't, as Sam used to do. That, again, could be quite a good format for Doctor Who, is to thrust him. I mean, he's a time traveler. Thrust him into a situation where he has absolutely zero idea what's going on. Yeah. Knock the TARDIS out of the wall in old Cartmel style. Leave it somewhere. Forget about that. And have him and the audience trying to work out what the hell is going on. Utterly from, you know, carte blanche, no idea. And that would be quite a good way to do Doctor Who as well.
Yeah.
So again, you wouldn't need to be doing world explosions or even massive monsters. It would be about watching the Doctor in a time zone having to adapt to perhaps a complex situation that he just doesn't understand, and he's got to pretend he's someone else. And do you know what I mean? That again could be another
revitalization
to the format. So yeah, but I mean, Quantum Leap had done what Orphan Black did, and just one character over, say, 10 episodes could have been a great idea. So yeah, Orphan Black's the other one. I'll just quickly say, I've said it before because I watched it last year, rewatched Delta and the Bannermen again. I still think that's a very good story. It does have its flaws, no doubt, but it does have a lovely little pace to it, and again is an example of the show trying to do something a little different.
Okay, I like Delta. I'll go with that. My other recommendation this week is what I was alluding to earlier on. I was supposed to be gardening the other night, but I injured my shoulder carrying some compost from the boot of the car around to the back garden. So I sat down and watched TV for a bit, and I caught the end of The God Complex.
Oh, yes.
Now, I don't recall being particularly fond of it at the time. There were some good things about it, but I feel that it is a missed opportunity because it has this particular ending, and this is where I'm going back to what we're talking about with Martha's family and with River Song. There's this ending which is really, really quite brave for Moffat, which he then undoes two episodes later, the ending where Amy and Rory leave the Doctor.
Yeah.
And I can't help but feeling, go and watch The God Complex and just tell me whether I'm wrong or not, basically. I can't help but feeling that should have been the end for Amy and Rory. Just leave them on Earth. Don't have to kill them off. There's no need to kill them off. Just leave them on Earth. They get on with their lives. They pop up again in the finale, although it's earlier versions of them. We don't need to do that bit at the end because, you know.
Yeah, that was twee, wasn't it?
Yeah. And just, you know, that's it. Just leave them there. Then the Doctor can go off and get a new companion in Series 7 called Clara, rather than having them coming back, going through the motions until the last episode when they'd go again.
It was a very messy ending for them, wasn't it? I mean, even down to the Asylum of the Daleks, where you felt that their storyline was going somewhere, you know, the fact that they were estranged and having problems.
Yeah.
But that was resolved in the same episode.
Yeah, yeah.
So we had no beginning. We had no inclination this was going to happen, bar maybe a mini episode or so. It didn't lead to anything, and it was as superfluous as their return. I totally agree. I think the God Complex is, and it's quite a traditional way to leave companions as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And to be, as you said, it comes back to, you know, I'm cautious now of us going over old ground in conversations, but it goes back to the fact that, you know, with Rose, to a certain degree, her stories were sort of pretty much told by the end of Series 1, that by Series 2, she felt a little superfluous.
Yeah. And then she came back.
And it keeps coming back
three times.
And yeah, and I kind of feel that with Amy is Amy and Rory's story had been told by the God Complex. I quite like the fact that Rory has that moment where he turns around and says, I've had enough of this.
Yeah, exactly.
It's done. I'm done. I'm finished. And that's where it should have finished.
Yeah.
Because their story, they'd found themselves. He gives them a nice life. Yeah, I totally agree. And I am going to watch that on your
own. And, you know, if they couldn't have got Jenna Coleman, then, you know, there was that other actress who'd been in Doctor Who quite regularly since 2010 that they could have done a few episodes with and maybe cemented that relationship a bit for us.
I actually, as much as I hate the thought of that, I do agree. I think that would have probably done her a lot of good.
Yeah.
Because maybe one of the problems with River Song is that she doesn't get the opportunity to actually exist as a person rather than either a plot feed or a one-liner feed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it would have probably done her a lot of good to have that opportunity to, and for the audience as well, to see what the relationship was about. Yeah, I agree.
Absolutely. So that's my other recommendation this week. Go and watch The God Complex and have a good think about what I've just said, basically. That sounds quite dictatorial, doesn't it? You don't have to have a good think about it, but take it on board and maybe leave us some comments and tell us what you think. That pretty much brings us to the end. I'm really hoping Brian's back next week instead of doing his kind of international playboy routine.
I know, it's getting irritating, isn't it?
He's terrible. Wandering around pretending he's Brett Sinclair. It's really doing my head in. yeah, that's it, I think. Anything you want to bring in as we close?
I'm just trying to think if there's anything I'd like to bring in before we close. I think we're in a good state this week, aren't we? Have you had no more problems with your action figure things, your figurines?
Well, no, I've cancelled my subscription. So
you have cancelled it, yeah, so that's the end of that.
I will be putting them in a box and maybe selling them on eBay.
Oh, good luck on that.
We'll see how it goes.
Yes, exactly. Especially after your scintillating reviews. I'm interested to see what your entry is on eBay.
I'm not expecting to make my money back. But we'll just see how it goes. Yeah, see how that goes. Right, so, ladies and gentlemen, if you've been listening to us on iTunes or Audioboo or Stitcher.com or through the website, we bid you goodbye until next time. Bye-bye.